Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of For the Girls. I'm your host, Victoria Alario. And today we have an incredible guest on, Samantha Daly, and she is an absolute badass business consultant, and I am so excited for you girls to hear this pod swap. She has her own podcast called Makeshift Happen, where she interviewed me, so you can listen to that on her show. We talked about all things dating, confidence, feminine energy. You girls know the drill. You girls know the vibes. It's a really good one. So much for you girls to hear over on Makeshift Happen. And then here on For the Girls, you can learn more about Samantha in today's episode, where we are talking all things money, honey. So we are diving into entrepreneurship, relationships, balancing your energy, how to make six-figure months, because yes, Samantha makes six figures monthly, and she does not gatekeep. She shares so much on that energetically, mentally, tangibly, in every possible way. So there is a lot to unpack here, and you do not want to miss this conversation. This might be one where you want a notebook and pen when you are listening, but you could also watch it on YouTube if you don't want to listen, if you would rather watch. I will have the YouTube linked in the show notes for quick, easy access. And of course, as well in the show notes, you can find the link to the Queens of Confidence digital program. If you have not gotten your hands on that yet, you absolutely need to, as well as the links to all things related to Samantha. And that is it. So let's get right into the episode. Welcome, Samantha, to For the Girls. So excited to have you. Introduce yourself to the girls.
Hi, girls. I'm so excited to be here. Oh my gosh, where should I start with this intro? Well, I mean, a little bit of who I am and what I do. I'm a business consultant for female entrepreneurs. So the journey to getting here was long and windy and untraditional. But yeah, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. I went to school in Ohio. I lived in Spain for 6 years. I now live in South Florida. And yeah, I'm a Sagittarius. I love to travel. I don't know. What else do you want to know about me? How deep should we go?
Well, you know what? Let's go a little deep. How you mentioned Spain. We got to talk about this because you told this to me yesterday and I love this story. Can you tell the girls how you met the man that you've been with for, I think you said 10 years or 11 years now? Tell us about this because I know that that's what they want to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a good story for the girls. So when I was 21, I studied abroad in Spain. So I was in college and I had always wanted to travel, right? Like I'm a Sagittarius. I have that big, you know, love for travel and international and wanting to see the world. But I grew up in a family where we didn't really travel very much. We would do like road trips to like amusement parks or things like that. But we were not like the family that was taking these like big family vacations to like Caribbean islands or to Europe, or like we weren't going to Italy. And of course, you know, I grew up around people that were doing that kind of stuff. And I just always was so inspired by this idea of travel. So when I was in school, I, you know, realized that studying a foreign language would probably be my ticket to be able to study abroad or like be able to travel in some way, shape, or form, because I could convince my parents that it was a necessary part of my education. So because I loved Spanish and I was good at it, I decided to keep studying it through college, and I minored in Spanish for business. So when it came to my junior year, I was like, this is my chance. I'm going to get to study abroad. I'm going to go to Spain. And so I went all by myself. I went through a third-party program. I didn't go with anyone that I knew. I didn't live with anyone that I knew. I just was completely on my own. I lived with a host family. So I was like living with a Spanish family, trying to get fluent in the language, just like really immersing myself. But there was a bunch of girls on this trip, and we all happened to be single and 21 at the time. And this is 2015. So we got word that Tinder was a popular thing that was happening in Europe at the time. So we're obviously, you know, in college, and we went to like a big school. We were at Ohio State University. We were in Greek life. So we didn't really use dating apps at the time. And this was the only dating app that was out. So this is, you know, I'm dating myself, but like it was fresh on the scene, girls. Tinder was the new thing. So anyway, we hear about the fact that like Tinder is, people are actually using it in Europe, and they're like meeting up with people. And So we're like, okay, would it be fun? Like, should we all do it? Should we all like just download this app? So all of us single girls on the trip download the app. We're like swiping in class, just, you know, having fun, like looking at foreign guys, like thinking this is going to be a just a fun kind of like pastime thing. I end up meeting the guy that I'm still together with today, 10 years later. We bought a house together. He moved to America for me. Like it turned into a whole actual thing, but it was pretty wild because it just started as a like do it for the story kind of thing. And so I was like, I'm just going to go on a date with this guy. I thought he was really hot. I messaged all my friends. I was like, if I don't hook up with him, this whole trip is a waste. Like I just was totally in that like young mindset of doing things for the story and just like wanting to have fun. And so we met up and we had a horrible first date. We both agreed it was the worst first date of our lives, mostly because of the language barrier, right? So we had been talking and messaging for a while, but you can use Google Translate. You can like double check what you're typing. So once we got in person, I think first dates are kind of like nerve-wracking to begin with. You want to showcase your personality. You want to be able to be a little cheeky, a little funny. Like you want to be able to speak eloquently. And that was all just really hard in a second language that was still very much learning. Like I was very good at reading and writing and, you know, speaking when I had time to really think and process, but like dating and trying to have those kind of like candid, like conversations like that in that environment was just so foreign to me. So the date was awful. We could barely communicate with each other. He picked me up at one point, threw me over his shoulder, pretended to throw me in a trash can. Like he was trying to show, like we were trying to banter and like show each other our personalities, but like the language barrier was like, it was tough. It was tough. So we get, the date finishes and he drives me back to my host family's house and he drops me off and he stops the car and he just says, ciao. And I just get out of the car, like no hug, no kiss, no nothing, just ciao, which was very cold. So I get out and I'm like, oh my God, like he's never talking to me again. This was like the worst date ever. So I'm immediately messaging all of my friends like, okay, you guys, like I survived. I didn't die. I'm really glad I did it. But also like he thinks I'm an idiot because like what the hell was that? But then a couple days later, I went to London and I met up with some of my other friends who were in Europe at the time. And so they were asking me about it. And I was like, yeah, we're not talking ever again. But like, I'm glad I challenged myself. And then he messaged me. We're like on the London Eye. And I like get a text. And he's like, when are you going to be back in Madrid? And I'm like, what does this man see in me? Like, were we on the same date? And he's like, I want to see you again. And so when I got back to Madrid, we saw each other again and again. And then the physical chemistry was there. And I think we got more comfortable. We got more relaxed. Our communication improved. I think the nerves were like really heightened on the first date, but yeah, it just got like better and better over time. And then we were basically like seeing each other several times a week for a couple months while I was there. And then when I left, I was like, I'm probably never going to see him again, right? Like this is where this ends. We're 21. We live in different continents. We have our whole lives ahead of us. Like this would be silly to think that this is a relationship. So I was, you know, really under the impression that that's where that was going to end. And I got on the plane and I cried and, you know, I realized how much I felt for him, but I was also like, okay, no contact. Like it's not healthy to try to do this and it doesn't make sense. But then it was his birthday and oh my God, birthdays always bring people together even when you don't want them to. Like do not text your ex on a birthday. But it was his birthday like 2 weeks later. So we started talking and then we were Skyping and then he was like, I can't imagine life without you. Like I have to come to America. I had never been to America before. So he came to visit me at school, met all of my college friends. We took him to college football games, brought him to a frat party, like basically like Americanized him. And then we dated long distance for a year. And when I graduated from school, I decided that I wasn't going to take my job offers in Chicago and that I was going to, on a whim, move back to Spain and teach English in the schools there so that I could get a visa and just see what happens. And that turned into me living there for 6 years.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. I feel like I have so many questions. So now he came to visit you, but he didn't understand English, right? He didn't speak English at all.
He did. So we both were like learning each other's language. So he did speak some English like when we first met. So he was trying to speak English to me a little bit, but I was also trying to speak Spanish to him. But I think over the, you know, the 4 months of us like dating, even though I don't think we were really considering it dating while we were there, but you know, when I was in Spain and we first met, those first couple of months, like we did get a lot better in our communication. But also, I didn't know this. He apparently was buying English books and he was studying grammar. And then after I left and he realized that this was something like serious that he wanted to pursue, he also hired a teacher and he was taking speaking classes. And so he was doing a lot of effort behind the scenes
to improve the English. That is so cute. That is the cutest thing that I've ever heard. Okay, another question was, did you ever, okay, after you were so dead set on like you were never going to see him again. So afterwards, did you ever go back and say like, what made you ask me on a second date? Like after that terrible first date, what made you, you know?
Yeah, I did. And you know, well, there was a part of the story that I missed. So we'll rewind just a little bit because that first date was our first actual date, but it wasn't the first time that we tried to meet up because we had, I met him on Tinder and I'm in a foreign country. Like, yes, I'm 21 and I'm young and I'm dumb, but I wasn't that stupid. So I wasn't getting in a car with a man from an app in a foreign country, like taken. Hello. I was well aware of that. So what I did was, it was St. Patrick's Day. And I, you know, all of our group of friends were going to go to this Irish pub in the center of Madrid and like go out for the night for St. Patrick's Day. So I invited him and I was like, hey, we're going to be here. You know, if you want to come, would be nice to see you. We can meet up and hang out so that it would be in a public place. All of my friends would be there, et cetera. So Spanish people go out really, really late, but because this was a, you know, Irish holiday and it was all these expats and, you know, Brits and Americans, we were going out early to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. So we get to the bar at like 8. He doesn't show up until after 1 a.m, which is quite typical for Spanish people. So he was thinking, you know, I got a pregame, got like, you know, whatever, I'll show up later. But at that point, like I'm sauced. I'm like so drunk. I'm ready to go home. Like half my friends have left. So I'm actually walking out of the bar, stumbling out of the bar, and I hear my name and I look up and it's him. And I don't even remember this like interaction really, but the way that he recounts it is that he was asking me, oh, are you leaving? Do you want to go back in? Are you going to stay? Should we get a drink? And you know, trying to figure out like the situation because I was leaving and he was coming in. And all I was saying is CCC, no, no, no. I was just saying, yes, 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 no, no, no. And then I literally was like, okay, bye. And I just got in a taxi and left. So I really think that that encounter built some intrigue for him because he was like, okay, this girl literally like is so not fussed. Like she doesn't need me. She's not, you know what I mean? It was kind of that like very like detached energy of like, I think it almost made him want to chase a little bit. Like, and I'm not normally that person. Like I would not normally behave like that. So I think, God, universe was on my side.
He got
that
you
night.
In like a vulnerable state. And it worked. It definitely worked. But that makes sense.
I think that built initially the intrigue of him being interested in me because I seemed like such an, you know, independent person that didn't really need his attention. I was at the bar having fun with my friends. You show up late. See you later. Like I'm not staying to hang out with you now. Like bye, you know? So I think that is what helped us kind of get to the point where he was like, let me actually meet you now. And so that was our first date that we were sober for, and our English and Spanish, you know, mix of communication was off and it was really tough to talk. But then yes, years later, my college friends and I asked him actually when he was hanging out with us, we were like, why did you, or I think they asked him, they were like, why did you ask Sam on a second date if the first date was so bad? And he said it was just something about her eyes. Like she mesmerized me in that way. And when I looked at her, I just knew that she was a special person for some reason. And I wanted to get to know her more.
Okay. There you have it. They're so romantic, these Europeans. Like, geez, something about her eyes. Okay. I'll take it.
Sure.
You do have beautiful eyes. So he wasn't wrong with that. I like that. okay. So now let's back up because you mentioned that when you graduated school, you ended up denying and declining any job offers that you had. Then you went to Spain and you taught English. So how did one thing lead to another? Because now you said you're a business consultant, you're, you know, a huge entrepreneur, very successful. So what was that journey like leading up to here? Like, how did you get to this point?
It was long and windy, you know, and I think initially there was no plan, nothing made sense. And that's a huge part of, you know, something that's become a real value for me in my life is this ability to take risks and have courage and follow your heart and listen to your gut and always lead with intuition. Cause I do believe that it never leads you astray, even when it feels like it makes no sense. So when I was getting to that point of finishing senior year of college and, you know, I'm in this long distance relationship with this man that I love, but that lives in another country, and I'm having to decide on what I'm going to do for my career and how I want to move forward, there was just this real sense of, if I don't give this a try, I really feel like I'll regret missing the opportunity. And the reason that I was able to decline those job offers and move to Spain to make, you know, like a poverty level wage, it wasn't like I was choosing it because it was some great career opportunity. Like, I was going to be an English assistant in the primary schools, teaching young kids, you know, how to speak English and not making a lot of money. I wasn't doing it for the glory or for the career path at all. I was doing it for love, but I was doing it for me. And that was one of the most powerful moments in my life where I really chose me over everything else. I chose what my heart wanted. I chose what my soul was desiring, and I let the rest of the pieces fall into place. And ever since that moment, that was just kind of a decision for me of, I'm going to live my life in this way, because I really believe that's how miracles unfold for you, is being courageous enough to make those choices even when they don't make sense, because there is something in it for you. And I could have never imagined what was going to come out of that, you know? But being able to say, like, in front of, you know, my family, who obviously had concerns and questions about me moving to Europe for a man that I met on a dating app and declining my corporate job offers after I, you know, had spent a lot of money, of course, with the help of my parents on a really great education. And I was just like, yeah, so I think I'm like not going to use that. And instead, I'm going to go do this thing for, you know, this guy. Of course, people had concerns. Of course, people thought I was crazy. And I'm sure that there was a lot of people that had opinions about it behind my back that I never heard about as well, just in terms of like friends or people that I went to school with. Overall, I can see from the outside how it would seem like not a great idea, but really being able to have the trust and faith in your own path and in something outside of yourself of being able to take that leap. And that was the thing that, of course, changed my whole life, because once I moved to Spain permanently, I was initiated into this whole personal development journey where I started discovering so much about myself. I think that happens to a lot of people when they travel. But I was listening to more podcasts. I was reading books. I started getting really deep into mindset, subconscious reprogramming, affirmations, meditation. I was practicing yoga again. I was on a journey to heal my body image because I had got so disconnected from who I thought that I was. And I gained weight in college and between studying abroad, and I didn't recognize myself. And so there was a lot of things that were going on at that time that really like thrust me into a deep personal discovery journey. And that unlocked so much for me, and it changed my life in so many ways. And then I started blogging about it and sharing about it online. And then that turned into me getting a life coaching certification. And I got a job working for an influencer planning retreats, and I was flown out to Bali in Greece, and we were doing these meditation retreats. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is my dream job. And then I suddenly got fired, and then I was unemployed again. And there were so many ups and downs and winds in the path to really landing at the place where I am now as a successful entrepreneur. But it all required following my gut and leaning into what felt most inspiring for me at the time and just trusting that things would unfold. And through that, I built a ton of skills. I made a lot of connections, and I discovered my true talent and gift in the world that I really feel like I'm meant to help other women believe in themselves, establish a bigger vision for their lives, put their gifts and their talents out into the world through the form of a business that can also help them generate wealth, not only for themselves, but for their families generationally, make them happier, more inspired. I think that's the way that we on an individual level really start to change the world, because the more women that are waking up and they actually are feeling confident, happy, fulfilled, abundant, the better the world becomes, because that woman's energy is going to ripple out into, you know, everyone who comes into her field. It's going to affect her family. It's going to affect her children. It's going to affect her friends. People are going to look at her and be inspired by her and say, oh my gosh, you know, look how much she's changing her life. Look at what she's doing. Look at the money she's making. If she can do that, I can do that. I really do believe that our success is the world's success if we are coming at it from this heart-centered space, because we automatically then just uplift others and inspire others to rise with us. And so I discovered through my own journey of doing that, that that was what I wanted to help other women do, but it was not a straight line.
Yeah. And I know now from looking at your website that you do have so many different offers, but I'm sure it started at in one place, you know, and then it just like expanded to more ideas and more things. And so exactly what you just said, like when you share it from the heart, so I think that you're able to create so much more. I think that there is a never ending, a limitless amount of work that we can do and content that we can provide. And one thing is like in general, because I have been doing this for 10 years now, all different forms of content creation, I get a lot of messages from girls who say things like, I want to do that, but how will I know what to post every day? Or I really want to be an influencer or a content creator, but I'm afraid that I'll forget to post or I won't know what to post. And my thing is just always like, if this is your life's calling, like your life's purpose, that none of those things are possible. Now, if you're doing it just because it looks good that somebody else does it and it really doesn't resonate with you and it doesn't feel genuine to you, then yeah, maybe you will forget to post. Maybe it will feel like a chore to do the work. But when it's just who you are and you're just so embodied in this purpose and in this mission of, like you just said, sharing success and inspiring and uplifting others, that is not possible. It's going to be like brushing your teeth in the morning. It's just what you do. It's just who Samantha is, you know?
Yeah, it's the difference between doing something because you think it's going to give you a certain outcome or doing something because you think it's lucrative, which I think a lot of us, you know, may have gotten initially into careers or studied things because we thought, I want to have a good job. You know, that's really common in our generation of growing up, feeling like I want to have a good job. And so you choose things based on what you think it's going to give you, not really thinking about what you can give to it. So, and then you end up in a place where you're like, oh, I studied law because that looked attractive and fancy. And I know that it's lucrative, but I hate my life, you know, or my parents really wanted me to become a doctor. And I convinced myself that their vision was my vision because it seemed like a good idea to become a doctor. But now I hate my life because it was born from this, you know, what is the thing that I'm going to be able to get something out of? And it wasn't like, what do I want to give to? What do I want to pour my time into? What do I want to spend my life force energy growing and building and nurturing? And when you find the thing that you actually want to be part of, that you actually want to pour into, you won't have all of those, you know, excuses. Of course, it's not always easy. Like there are hard things about being a business owner in general. There's hard things about any career path, right? But for me, you know, I have a lot of people come to me and they're like, oh my gosh, social media and content. I'm just like, I can't relate to how often people are complaining about this because I would do this for free. I did do it for free. I still do it for free. I don't get paid for my content. Like, you know, I do other things, but if you really love it, then you want to give yourself to it.
Yeah. I also feel like everything you just said is very symbolic of, or the other way around, your choice to go to Spain for love rather than take the job offers that you had in Chicago. Those are symbolic of everything that you just said, because you just made such a big point of like, people tend to do things just because it's wrapped up in a bow and sounds nice. I graduated college. I spent all this money on a degree and I immediately got job offers in the city of Chicago, which would be, maybe for someone, it would be their dream, like, which would sound like a dream. Like, okay, there you go. But you were also faced with a choice of the unknown of this might not work out. You know, this might be a big epic fail and I'm not going to make a lot of money and I'm not using my degree and whatever. But you were faced with the choice of like, do what sounds like what you're supposed to do and do what resonates with your heart. And so I feel like everything you just said there, like really that's like portrayed in that choice that you made 10 years ago. And so I think that that's something really important. But I also want to talk a little bit more about tangibles too, because we're talking about results and people doing things and what they think they're going to get out of it. And I saw a clip on your, it must have been from your podcast, but I saw it on your Instagram where you were talking about, people always talk about results and I'm manifesting results and I'm manifesting results. And it's always like manifesting this. And you were like, but they're not actually doing the thing to make it happen. Everyone's talking about vision boards and writing it down, but not actually about taking the action and making things happen. So I would love to know from you, because now, okay, you started with this, you know, idea of like, okay, I want to help women and whatnot. And it came after lots of different trials and tribulations, but now it led you to a point where you're making six-figure months. You're making over $100,000 a month. So, or I don't know if that's every month, but at least that is some months for sure from what I've seen from your content. So with that being said, first of all, how did you get to that point? If you remember like the first time that ever happened, any like notable things from that experience, but also tangibly, like, was there something different, not just about the energy, but things that you did that maybe girls listening could take away that really want to like 10X their results and actually do it, not just manifest it and tell themselves like, I'm aligned and whatever, like the real deal stuff.
Yeah. So I am a spiritual girly through and through. We love manifestation. It's one of the things that I've always taught since the very beginning, but I also love strategy and I'm very like tangible. So if you come into my world and you want to learn from me, you are going to get blueprints, you're going to get steps, you're going to get, this is what you actually need to be doing. And then we're also going to infuse, you know, behind the scenes of while we're doing all of those forward moving steps, we are going to be practicing these belief systems that support that, us getting even better results, right? So I say my idea of, you know, business mentorship is really where strategy meets spirituality, because I think both of those things are so important when we combine them together. It's where you get too far on one side or the other and you disregard the other piece that I think your results are could be there, but they're not going to be optimized, right? I think you can get the best results when you have both of those things going hand in hand. And so that's really kind of how I operate in business and how I help my clients. And so to your point of, yeah, scaling to something like six-figure months, I would say that the result of having a six-figure month in business has a lot to do with brand and community. And it's not something that happens day one in your business. And, you know, for some people, it can happen in the first year, but I don't think that it's necessarily the most common thing or very likely, because it's something that takes time to build this energy of connection and trust. I mean, people are going to buy from you when they trust you. And the way that we learn to trust people in real life in relationships is through getting to know them and feeling like we understand them deeply and that we have this, you know, reciprocal relationship with them. And that takes time to build with in-person connections. It's going to take even longer to build with digital connections, because who are you to them? You're just some random girl on the internet. And so to really build a community of people that feel like they know you, they know your heart, they know your stories, they know your intentions, they know that what you're doing is pure, they know that you are not trying to exploit them or steal from them or run some kind of like sleazy operation, but that really over time and through the delivery and the results and the care that you pour into your work and the results that you get your clients, there's this perception of, oh, wow, okay, this is someone that I can actually trust. This is someone who actually does really good work. I really want to invest in working with this person. And that's built over time. And so the first six-figure month that I ever had was definitely a compound effect of that. It was like I had this program that I had been running for several years at that point, and it was just about scaling the volume, the amount of people that purchased that program in one single round to a level where it could generate six figures in sales. And so it wasn't like the first time I think sometimes people think, oh, I just have to have the right product, or I just have to choose the right thing to sell, and that's what's going to make me all of this money. And while sometimes the vehicle is somewhat important, I think whatever vehicle you choose, if you have a really strong personal brand, and if you build that community and you build that trust, and you continue to stay consistent and compound with something over time, the volume of how many people are buying that thing or joining that thing or wanting to work with you in that way is naturally just going to grow. And then that is probably what's going to take you to those higher cash months. So of course, there's strategy in the back end behind launching a product or a program. It was really fun the first time I hit six figures, because I was actually at Ultra Music Festival in Miami, and I was dancing and having fun. I was with one of my business clients, actually, and we were just seeing the emails come in of people, you know, joining this mastermind that I was selling. And we were waiting in line for the porta potties, and I was doing math on my calculator. And then there's like a picture of me like showing the calculator where it like crossed the $100,000 mark. And I think that, like, from an energetic perspective, there is a lot to be said for having like fun and levity and magnetism when you're in that state of really like pushing and selling something, because your energy is ultimately what attracts the people to you. So it's a combination, but I think it's like that, having that long-term vision. And what I think has worked really well for me that I see other people maybe not do so well is the consistency of sticking with something that can build brand recognition. So I see a lot of other coaches and people that do similar work to me, you know, they have a product and then they have another product and then they have another product and then they change and then they switch niches and then they pivot and then they do this. And they've never done something for long enough for it to actually have that snowball effect where the volume of people joining it just grows and grows and grows. And now you have six-figure months. And so that I think is a really big piece of the strategy. But of course, launching something in a really strategic way, doing a free masterclass, bringing people into the community, having like a live event that feels really exciting, that first six-figure month, everyone who joined this free masterclass that I was hosting, I have this like room that I'm in right now, which is our spare bedroom in my office, the two walls are floor to ceiling windows. And so on all of these windows, I wrote down everyone's name with window markers, everyone who signed up to this masterclass. It was like thousands of people. I was spending hours on a step stool writing everyone's names, but it created this like hype and this excitement and this feeling of community again, of like, this is someone who, and it was fun for them to, I would, you know, do little Instagram stories of the windows and people would be like, I see my name. Like, yeah, I'm not just writing random names. Like, I'm actually looking at the people who sign up. I'm taking the time. I'm writing your name. Like, I do care about my work. I am as excited as it looks like I am about the things that I offer. And then I'm selling something that I've sold for years. And so it has recognition and it has incredible results, and the testimonials are there and the proof is there. And so naturally it just expands.
Wow. That is so powerful. And you know what? It's so like, you would think it's like common sense. You would think it's so simple, right? Like, but the truth is that it's not, because people overcomplicate things. And I think especially when it comes to business, people assume it's gonna be hard, which in ways it is, but it's gonna be hard. So they already anticipate hardships, you know, like they anticipate it to be hard. So the things like just building your own true personal brand and building a community, like that is something that is often overlooked. Even let's say, forget people who own a business, but even just like content creators in general, they're not even engaging back with the people in their comment section. They want comments, they want likes. And if they don't have, if say they have three comments and 500 likes, it's like, this performed really bad. Like, my engagement is super low, but you're not even appreciating, well, like, the people in the comments.
Your engagement is super low. Like, you personally, you're not engaging with shit. If that's how you're operating, it goes back to, again, what we said earlier of, you're doing something because you want to receive. You're in it to get something, and you're actually not willing to give very much. What are you willing to give to your community? You know, when I was first starting, I did so much. I was like on live all the time doing these like journaling sessions. I was always guiding meditations. I hosted like a girls' room thing during COVID where we would just get on Zoom and we would just talk, and I would just chat with people and I would answer questions. I was doing free masterclasses all the time, you know, pouring hours and hours into these presentations, you know, detailed things of really helping people change pieces of their life completely for free. There was so much that I did. I would teach yoga classes. I would go live on Instagram, work out with me on Saturday. Like, I was doing fucking everything. I was doing anything. I just wanted to be in the room with my people. I wanted to connect with them. I wanted them to know me. I wanted them to see me. I wanted to be able to remember their names. Like, I actually wanted to be involved because I actually gave a shit.
Yeah. Girls, we gotta talk. I know you're sick of settling for the bare minimum. I know you crave more in life. So imagine if you had the tools to stop settling and start raising your standards and start getting everything you want. How would life be different if you developed undeniable confidence? Well, you're about to find out with my Queens of Confidence digital program. It's an 8-module program that has been proven to change lives through recorded coaching videos, journal prompts, worksheets, and a community discussion board for you to ask me any questions and connect with the other members of the program. Topics include the 5 levels of the self, external validation, feminine and masculine energy, boundaries, high standards, communication skills, self-doubt, limiting beliefs, imposter syndrome, daily habits, mindful living, emotional availability, improving your relationships, understanding your needs, attracting everything you want, and more. You get instant access to the entire program right now, and you can watch and learn at your own pace because it's yours forever. And right now, it's on a limited time discount, so you can have it all for a discounted price if you buy now. Some of the queens who have completed the program said, "It's one of the best investments I ever made. Vic is an expert when it comes to confidence. I love how comfortable she made me feel, but at the same time, she told me exactly what I needed to hear so I can grow. In only a couple of weeks, my life is already changing." So girls, invest in yourself. You're worth it, and your 2.0 self will thank you. Head to victoriaalario.com or click the link in the show notes and get the program on a discounted rate for a limited time now. Do you struggle to find comfort in your body? Do you experience cravings, bloating? If so, then you need Hormone Harmony, the solution for women of all ages to maintain optimal hormone levels. It reduces bloating and discomfort and supports your mood and general well-being. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in the reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code FORTHEGIRLS for 15% off today. I know every girl that struggles with her weight is sick of being told diet and exercise only by doctors when it comes to weight loss strategies, because sometimes there's more to it. A friend of mine was actually denied safe and affordable medications and told to get a bike. But I just found Mochi Health, a telehealth platform for weight loss that's dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care. Mochi Health includes visits with board-certified doctors, nutrition consultants, and medication delivered right to your door, including GLP-1s like Ozempic and generic compounded versions that are actually affordable and accessible regardless of insurance coverage. Their dietitians work hand-in-hand with your medication to create personalized nutrition plans that fit your lifestyle and help you reach your weight loss goals by making easy and sustainable changes to achieve results. So get started at joinmochi.com and be sure to use my code FORTHEGIRLS to get $40 off. That's joinmochi.com and code FORTHEGIRLS for $40 off.
I love that. And I think that everything you just said, like, is so creative, and that's what makes you stand out. And there's a reason why you have the results that you have. And then someone who's just trying to, you know, just like we said, jump the gun and get the results, they're not going to have that, because you, there was a saying that was said to me once that always stuck with me. It's like, if you want to do what I do, you have to do what I did. And I did what I did to do what I do, but you're just trying to do what I do. You're not trying to do what I did. And you can't skip chapters. It's like opening a book and going to chapter 15 and expecting to know what the story is about, you know, like you just, you can't skip over that stuff. And so, yeah, like, of course it's hard because it's hard work and you're not going to see the results right away. But when it, what it comes down to, like the tangible things of it, like it actually is easy if you just follow your heart and do what, you know, you got to do and build that community and build that sense of your brand. And listen, when I, how you mentioned, like you also create content for free. Of course we all do. Back before I started doing this full-time, you know, I've been full-time from social media working. I spent 3 years with a blog, with creating content. My mom and I would go into the city with like 10 outfits and spend a whole full 8-hour workday walking around the city with my, I had a pop-up tent. And I would get dressed and naked on the streets of the city with my pop-up tent. We got kicked out of parks because you can't have public indecency. You can't get naked in the park. Sometimes we would drive in and I would change in the car. Or when I had a full-time job because I was working in the city, I would take my coworkers and I would switch outfits because everyone was pretty tiny. And I would take a shirt from this one and pants from that one. And then we would swap clothes. And on my lunch break, I would go take pictures of myself. And, you know, I would not eat lunch. I would snack throughout the whole day so that I could spend my lunch break taking photos instead of eating. And my boss was like, I worked in a fashion showroom. So sometimes I was like sneaking out the clothes and I would like take pictures in them. And then my boss would see them on my Instagram, like, oh, how did you get that blazer or whatever? And it's like, oh, it was just a sample. Like, I don't know, whatever the case was, like whatever I had to do, like to me, like I look back now, it's like, it wasn't even a second thought. I just did it because I wanted to be a content creator. And I was doing all this obviously unpaid for free just because I was passionate about it and loved what I was doing. And I think, yeah. I think even if you weren't making the money that you're making, even if you were doing, you know, bare minimum, like getting like bare minimum results, I think you would still be doing it anyway. And that's, yeah, that's when you know if it's like a true thing for you. Because I mean, this is my podcast. I'm not always getting ads on it. It's not always the most lucrative business, but I have hardly ever missed a week in the past 3 years because I love what I do and I would continue to do it even when I don't have ads. And so, yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to. Would you do it for free? And I think you would. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, totally. And I was the same way. I look back sometimes and I'm just tired at like all the stuff that you probably relate. I'm like, wow, I was really doing the most back then. Like I had 3 jobs at one point. I was doing network marketing. I was social selling. I was doing this unpaid internship for these influencers and planning retreats. And I was also teaching in the schools. And then I was on my lunch break running down the street a couple of blocks to a Starbucks and quickly sliding into a back booth and opening up my laptop and having a call with a client and then literally running down the street back to the school to get back into the classroom. Like I was doing the most, but again, at the time, like didn't think anything of it. It was just because I had that tenacity. I had that inspiration. I think if you don't have that and you're trying to force it, it's probably not your thing.
Yeah. So we're talking a lot about what you do, what you need to have and whatnot. But I want to know about certain things that people don't have, like blockages. You work with a lot of clients who want to obviously 10x their results. So what would you say are like some of the most common blockages that you've had to help people break through? Like the most pushback, like, oh, I would, but XYZ, like what are the most like excuses that you get?
I mean, I think like when it comes to showing up, to build a personal brand, especially, there's a lot of resistance around the idea of visibility, of being seen, of being afraid of negative comments, of haters, of judgment. You know, if someone is really sensitive to that in their personal life already, someone who's like really influenced by this idea of someone not approving of them or someone having a judgment about how they live their life or what they wear or how they talk or anything like that, then it's just going to be like exacerbated when you put yourself online because you're opening yourself up to even more visibility and even more opinions. And so I think that's a really big block for people, is this idea of actually being seen in their authenticity, being seen for who they truly are, and not being accepted for that or being judged for that or being actively, you know, potentially like hated for that. And that's just a reality of what can happen on the internet. And so I don't invalidate that fear at all. But I think it's inspiring to watch these women come in and be like, I'm really scared to like, like post this video or like be myself. And then they do it and they feel so fucking liberated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I think for a lot of people, it feels like, you know, the naked mile. Like, I think that's so crazy that people will like run a mile naked. And it just feels so vulnerable to be like,
Never heard of that. I didn't know what you were referring to, the naked mile.
Never heard of the naked mile?
No.
Yeah. Like a naked mile is like when people, it's like a race. You run a mile, but like everyone's like completely nude. It feels like the most vulnerable thing ever, right? Imagine yourself out in the street running. That's, I think, what people feel like internally when they think about showing up as their authentic selves online or expressing their, you know, sarcastic side or their blunt side or their really funny side or their silly side or, you know, or their, maybe their really vulnerable side. Like if that's not something that they're used to, it can feel as vulnerable as like running a mile naked. But after you do it, you almost feel like unstoppable. You're like, okay, well then no one can touch me now because like, I just did this thing, like, you know, and it feels amazing. So I think that's one of the biggest resistances that I see come up for people. And then there's other ones just, you know, as more like it relates to money, of believing that it has to be hard or that, you know, it's going to take so long, or just having certain dynamics with money mindset in general in their life can really block people from the success that they're seeking in business. It could be beliefs that they've, you know, inherited or grown up with, but it could also be their own kind of patterns of either anxious attachment or avoidant attachment that also shows up in money, of really wanting to like lean in and hoard and check everything and know what's happening with your money all the time, or also being extremely avoidant where you're like, I'd rather not check the bank balance. I don't really know. You have no idea how much debt you have. You don't really know what your credit card balance is, but you're just like hoping that it all like, it'll work itself out. So those dynamics can kind of like show up. And then that's obviously something that's going to have to get worked through and sorted out if you want to reach that next level of success, because you are this energetic vessel, and the way that you prepare yourself is dictating kind of what you're open to receive. And so I think that's a lot of, you know, the journey that entrepreneurs go on with me and just in general on their journey of like little by little, you start to discover those pieces of yourself that require looking at and that require healing so that you can progress and grow to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Back to your first point real quick with, you know, the people who are hesitant to post and then they do and they feel so liberated. It goes hand in hand with one of my quotes that I just say all the time. I really started saying it in regards to business, but it really spiraled into applying with everything in life. I always just say confidence is a byproduct of action. You don't get confident and then take action. You take action and then you get confident. And so I'm a huge advocate for messy action and doing the thing and looking back a few years later and cringing at like, what the hell did I post? I look back at my stuff from years ago and I'm like, okay, we're going to archive that because that is like embarrassing. But at the time, it was what built my confidence, just doing it, just doing the thing. And yeah, your first time is going to suck. Your second time might suck too. And your third time might suck too. But the point is like, at least that first one led you to do the second and then to do the third and then to keep going until you eventually got good, until you eventually did not suck at it. And so a lot of people wait until they feel confident first in order to take the action. But I say it's the complete opposite. You're not going to build the confidence until you do the thing. So I think that that makes perfect sense. And then
I say the same thing about clarity as well. Like people are waiting for the clarity. They're like, well, I don't know exactly what the whole vision is, or, you know, I kind of want to do this, but then what would happen once I get to this point? Like they're getting so far ahead of themselves and they're waiting for the clarity, but it's the same thing. Like action is the thing that creates the clarity. You have to take step one and then step two appears. Like you don't get to sit there at the starting line and see steps 1 to 1,000 and the perfect fairy tale ending and be like, okay, and now I will pursue this path because I know for sure exactly how it's going to turn out for me. It's the same thing in relationships, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get to see exactly what's going to unfold with this person, but at some point you have to choose if this is the path that you're going to walk down. And that requires a lot of self-trust. And that's why I always say self-trust is my main business strategy. Like how can you move forward and actually take the messy action and take the big risks that are required if you don't trust yourself? And I think audacity is a big piece of that as well. Like the, you know, the confidence where maybe you feel like I don't really like deserve to have this level of confidence, but I'm going to like assume it anyways. Like I remember pitching myself for podcasts and things before. I didn't even have a podcast. I barely had a business, but I was like pitching myself to like big shows. And I'm like, I look back and I'm like, girl, I'm thank God for that audacity because like, wow. And I actually landed one of those shows and it completely exploded my business. It was like a show that had like multi-millions of downloads. And they were like, yeah, actually we would love to feature you. And I got so many people into my audience from it. I made probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars from clients who came to me from that up to that point. Like it was a big moment of being willing to like be cringy and put yourself out there and like ask for something, even if you think that you're not ready yet. And I did get rejected a lot. Of course, I pitched all these shows and people ghosted me. They never replied or they were like, yeah, no. Like, who is this girl? You know, I barely had like a following. I barely had a business. I barely had a brand. I didn't have a podcast. I had nothing to offer them. But I had the audacity. That's one thing that I did have.
I love that. I love that. It also goes hand in hand with another thing that I believe in is like anticipation, and what you anticipate is what you're going to receive. Like if you anticipate like, oh, but no one would want to have me on their show. Like, you know, I don't have enough credentials. I don't have the following. Like if that's what you anticipate, then like, you're not going to have it. You're not going to have the audacity and the gall to reach out. You're probably not even going to send the email at all. Whereas if you anticipate like someone's going to take the bait here, someone's going to want to have me on, then you're going to send out 1,000 emails because you already anticipate at least one person will say yes. And so you're going to keep doing the outreach until you get that yes. And so the audacity and the anticipation, they go hand in hand. And I really think that most of the answers to like people's questions really goes down to like your belief system and what you think. Like if you think it's a no, then it's a no. And if you think there's a chance of a yes, then you're going to go for that no 500 times until you get that one yes. And like, that's just going to be how it goes. And so that's why, yeah, you were willing to get rejected tons of times. I've been in the same shoes and like, look at the results from going for that no. And before I forget, I wanted to just very briefly go back to one of your original points where you were talking about money and people not wanting to, you know, having that like sticky situation with money. Like, I don't even want to check my bank account because I don't want that energy in my life. I think everything you also said without saying it is a matter of having an abundance mindset and the scarcity mindset being the thing that will, you know, negatively affect people. If you have that scarcity mindset around money or whatever, then not only receiving it will be hard, but giving it will be hard. Investing in yourself, because guess what, guys? Creating a website costs money. Hiring a team costs money. Having a creative designer to get your stuff together costs money. Whatever it is, like, so if you are already struggling with the money in your bank account, like, I don't know what my numbers even look like. Imagine when it comes to having to invest that money. It's simply not going to happen because people are going to have that mindset of like, I don't know whether it's cheap or stingy or just that lack, that scarcity of like, I don't have enough to give, and or the mindset of if I give, then it's taking away from me. And so, you know, when it comes to money and work and whatever, investments are going to have to be made. And so leaning into the abundant mindset is really, really important there.
Yeah. And I think it also goes, you know, some people swing the opposite way as well, where they're not stingy, but they're so out of control with money that they can't hold on to it. Like it comes into their life, they attract it, but it also slips through their fingers really quickly, or they like don't know where it went. And then they're in overdraft every month and they have a good job or they're making, and they're like, I don't know. I just am this in this kind of pattern where they're playing hot potato with money. Like they get money and then they're like, ah. And they like find a way to like spend it or get rid of it. So there are a lot of these dynamics, but I really think if you have noticed yourself being stuck in a certain pattern with money for some time, what that tells me is that you have not learned the lesson of that particular level of wealth, which means that you will not upgrade to the next one. So you are in the pattern that you're in because you're meant to learn something and change something. If you're not willing to look at it, then you're never going to learn it. You're never going to change it. And you're never going to ascend to the next level of receivership, of stewardship of money, right? Like actually being able to circulate money. Like as you were saying, it's not just having money or holding money, but it is, you're going to have to spend it. You're going to have to put it out in the world. Like we are, that's what we're doing. We are participating in the circulation of wealth. That's what makes an economy go round. We have to spend money. And it gets more and more challenging the larger the amounts become. Like when you're like, oh my gosh, wow, like this is the most amount of money I've ever spent on something. Like that's okay. That's an edge, but it gets to be exciting. And you're only going to ever get there if you're willing to look at what is the pattern that I've been stuck in? Why am I not ascending to that next phase?
Yeah, so true. You know what? That I actually can resonate at this point in time, because when it comes to buying Christmas decorations, every single time I make a dollar, it goes right back out the window. So if you're anything like me right now, you might be in a season of spending all the money that you're making, because it is the holiday season and I'm buying tons of Christmas decorations. Even last night, I'm like, add to cart. I'm sending my mom, which color napkin? Should I get the bright red? Should I get the dark red? Like it's a hard time, you know, and it's rough out here right now. So, but after Christmas decorations are done, we'll be back on track. I want to shift gears here though, because we talk a lot about energy and the things that, you know, we bring up, because everything is energy. But speaking of energy and business and whatnot, I would love to talk more about like masculine energy and feminine energy, because you mentioned a lot about your relationship. You also mentioned a lot about, you know, working hard and building these businesses and whatnot. And so I would say that it's very common that women, when building a successful career, tend to lean more into their masculine energy, because it is, like we talked about, action taking. It's that getting shit done. And sometimes it's all consuming, especially when you have goals and deadlines. It just takes over your life. And then you're like fully embodied in your masculine energy. And it's like, go, 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 control, 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 and really no time to just sit back and relax. And it might feel like there's little to no room for your feminine energy to tap in at all. So I want to know what your experience has been with this, and how, if and how you do make the effort to lean more into your feminine, so that you have that like successful career life, but then you also get to prioritize like your relationship and your personal life and leaning more into that energy too.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because this has like shifted and evolved over the years. Like when I was living in Spain, my partner was a lawyer, and the first couple of years that we were there, obviously my career path was very unstable, as we kind of alluded to. I was working in the schools. I was not making a lot of money. It was like, you know, 1,000 euros a month. More than half of it was going to rent. Like there, I mean, if you really do the math on that, it's like I was making like less than $15,000 a year. That's like crazy. And then 4 months out of the year, we were unemployed because it was summer break and we didn't get paid. So it was wild. And so he was having to pick up a lot of the slack for me. And so my dynamic with work was obviously very different at that time. But then once my businesses started growing and scaling and taking off and I was making more money, then I quickly became the breadwinner in the relationship. And then we moved to America and he had to change his whole career. And, you know, that really kind of shifted the things in terms of masculine and feminine energy, because, you know, I provide the majority of the finances for the household and we rely on my business and my work. And so there were things that we had to agree on together so that I wasn't going to get completely stuck in my masculine energy, because I feel like prior to us, you know, making that shift of moving back to the States and buying our beach condo here in Florida, I was doing really well with like actually leaning into my feminine energy. Like we kind of talked about this on my show, but I was like, okay, I'm going to let him do the grocery shopping and not be a control freak. And I'm not going to like send him a list. I'm just going to trust him to go and get the stuff. And I'm going to let him do the laundry. And it's okay if it's not folded perfectly, like fuck it, whatever. I have to delegate and I have to let him lead in these areas. I'm going to let him book the trips. I'm going to let him pick the hotels. I'm going to let him book the flights. Like I don't need to be like on top of things. I'm going to let him lead in these areas of our life so that I have more spaciousness to relax into my feminine when I'm able to, because the business is so demanding of that kind of like masculine side of myself. And so I was like, wow, okay, I'm doing so much better in having this balance. But then we moved and we bought a house and he, you know, was not an American citizen yet. And so a lot of those responsibilities fell on me. I was holding so much. We were in, you know, legal situations with him being able to get his green card in America. And I was managing the whole home buying process, which I had no fucking clue about. Like, and it's so deep and complex, and mortgages and insurance and realtors and, you know, HOAs and all these like applications and approvals and all of this paperwork. At one point I had to spend an entire weekday every single week just working on home and legal stuff. And then at the same time, I was moving my LLC from another state, from North Carolina to Florida. And so there was more legal things, there was more paperwork. So I was really in this like masculine overdrive. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay. And we're going to have a conversation about how this affects our dynamic in our relationship. And so we've had to work on it. Like, I'm not going to say, oh yeah, like, you know, we're perfect at this all the time. It's definitely, as things change in your life and as dynamic changes, you're going to have to also adapt and like learn new ways to lean on each other so that you can share that load. But I think from a financial perspective, you know, for us, it was important to really have a conversation about us kind of sharing finances and having a joint bank account. And we both have cards that connect to that bank account. But when we go out, he pays for things. And oftentimes it's from our joint account. So sure, some of my money is going towards it, but it's the energy of me being able to like relax into my feminine, of feeling like I'm being taken care of. Like, you planned the date, you are, you know, doing the act of paying for things, you're putting the card down, like all of that. So I think there's interesting dynamics when you are in a more like a modern situation where maybe it's not as traditional, but you still enjoy the feeling of a traditional like role in relationships. So we've had to find our way to like finesse so that I can be more in my feminine, but it's not always easy. I'm not going to lie. Like, I am very busy and I think I go in seasons. We have a lot of live launches and, you know, active like pushes for things in the business. And then there's other times where it's just kind of like a maintenance period. And in those maintenance periods, I am way able to be way more relaxed. Sometimes in the busy seasons, like, it's just, it is what it is. And sometimes you're in a busy season and it's understanding that with one another and being able to kind of like compensate and know what we need. Something that really helps me is taking weekends off always. I've always taken weekends off to reset my energy and just like fully be away from work. But now I've actually gone to taking Fridays off as well. So I have 3 days off every week, and that allows me to really kind of, you know, set that balance as well between the masculine and feminine energy.
I think that's so important too. And you know what? I think part of relaxing, honestly, is also being able to just say sometimes it is what it is, like what you just said, because it's also not feminine to be stressing about not being more feminine. Like, it's not, you're not embracing or embodying your feminine energy by being like, okay, I need to make more time to be in my feminine energy. Like, that is still not. So at the end of the day, I think it, even just accepting and saying, it is what it is. Like, I have to get shit done. Like, I'm busy. I am running, you know, a 7-8-figure business, however much it is. Like, I have shit going on. So sitting back and relaxing and kicking my feet up or whatever, it's just not an option right now. And that, like, I think that that's perfectly fair as well. And I do think that having that balance and having that time, just whether it's to yourself to decompress or to invest into your relationship so you guys could go on a little weekend trip or just go to the beach or even just sit home and watch a movie, whatever it looks like for you, is just important for anybody to avoid burnout. Because burnout, which I'm sure, you know, you can relate to more often than not, like, it's exhausting. And then you don't want to get to a point where you resent anything. You don't want to resent any part of your life. And you especially don't want to resent, you know, your partner or your relationship, which may have happened for you at times. I know tons of people who, like, when you're just overstimulated and so much going on, you're just like, okay, I can't even be in the same room as you right now. Like, let me be, like, I just need a second. And so balance and having, you know, those, allocating your time. Okay, this is business time, this is personal time, I think will help in any capacity just to feel better. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, like, it is, it all goes back to energy. It is about a feeling. So like you said, it's not about where the money came from. It's about the fact that, like, you go on a date and he's like, takes the check, and whether or not your money's in the bank account doesn't matter. It's the fact that you don't have to put out the energy of taking the bill, signing it, at leaving the tip,
like doing the math for the tips. See you later.
Right. And it feels nice to be able to be taken out, to be courted, to be romanced, then wined and dined. Like it's about feeling it. So for the girls who maybe they are, like you said, the breadwinner, making more money in their relationship, you don't have to, again, I bring up the word resent, but I don't know if that's the right word. You don't have to feel like resentful toward, oh, but I am, you know, carrying the load of this. It's just find the ways that work to where you could feel like he is leading and he is doing that job, you know, quote unquote, as a man, if you will. And like, it'll allow you to feel like a lady, even if you are the one that's bringing in most of the finances.
And there's so many other things that he does where I'm like, this is delegated to you. So I feel like I'm being taken care of. Like mail is something that I can't deal with. I can't stand it. I don't know how so many people have my address. I don't know why we get so many things in the mail. Like I wish that people would just leave us alone. But I'm like, the mail, you need to open all the mail. You need to tell me what's important, throw out the rest. Like that's your responsibility. Trash, you know, taking the dog out, laundry. Like he does all these other things that really make me feel super supportive. He pays all the bills. He knows what's happening with the mortgage, with the HOA payments. Like that all is being operated and run by him. Obviously we're sharing finances, but like it's the mental load of me not having to think about any of those things that helps support me actually being able to be in my feminine energy, which I'm so grateful for.
Yeah, it's like you get to turn your brain off when it comes to those things. Like, we have a mortgage. Don't even know because I don't look at the mail.
I'm like, babe, we're good on bills, right? Like everything. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, great.
You're like, okay, don't tell me anything further. Just double checking, just making sure. Are there any ways that you, whether it's prioritize time for your relationship or you spice things up or even like making time for sex, whatever it is, like what are the things that you do to keep your relationship, you know, feeling good while at the same time, like not feeling unproductive and not having that guilty conscience of like, oh, I don't have time to spend with you right now because there's so many other things I could be working on. Like, how do you manage that? And what are like your little tips there?
Yeah, I think communication is a huge piece of just understanding each other's schedules and when you're going to be free and when you're going to be able to kind of be in relax mode. So like I said, I take Fridays off and weekends are typically always off unless I'm, you know, randomly going to like some event or something like that. But yeah, that's our time that we know. Like we spend a lot of time together on the weekends. Like we do everything together. We go grocery shopping together. We'll do a workout together. We'll go to the beach together. We hang out at home and watch movies together. We play like conversation cards. Like we do make an effort to really spend time connecting in those parts of the week that we know are dedicated to connection time. Sometimes it's hard during the week. Like we don't always have the most amount of time like in the evenings, but we always eat dinner together and we sit down and like have a meal. And then even if I have to like get a few things done after that, there's usually still some like time for connection before we go to sleep. But we love taking beach walks together. That's like one of our best ways to like drop in. We'll both leave our phones at home and we'll just walk across the street to the beach and we'll take the dog out and just like, yeah, play, watch the sunset. Talk. Like, I think that's one of the biggest things that like reconnects you with your partner is actually being present and like talking to them, which also probably a lot of people can relate to this. Like you have really good conversations with your partner when you go out, when you do something outside of your routine, like when you go out on a date. I think that's why women love dates so much is like, yes, we like to be wined and dined and like the food and everything, but you know that it's like this dedicated time where you're looking at each other, where you're going to be in conversation. You're not going to go out to dinner and then sit on your phones, right? But if you're at home, like life is happening, pets, maybe kids, there's just a lot of other things. And so it's not that like focused, dedicated time. So that for us is, you know, dates and then beach walks really allow us to drop in. And we also love to travel. So we make an effort to like plan trips together and do fun stuff because that's one of our main ways to deepen our relationship, doing new things together, exploring new places together and connecting in that way because we both love to travel.
Yeah. I'm curious because you talk so much about how important communication is for you guys. What language do you speak to each other in?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it is so important because things can get lost in translation. Even now, you know, we've been together for almost 10 years and we speak both languages. So I'm fluent in Spanish at this point. He's fluent in English. So we do kind of flip-flop between both, but I would say we speak more English, probably mainly because when we lived in Spain, you know, our whole life was in Spanish because we were living in Spain. All of his friends and family and, you know, everything was in Spanish. So in at home together, we would speak English because that was really our way of making sure that he was practicing and like not losing his English. So we just got in the habit over those 6 years of living in Spain of talking to each other a lot in English. So I think that is our default, but we always switch back and forth and we get looks all the time in public. We don't even realize it, but we'll like change one word out or like I'll say something and then in English and then the next sentence will be Spanish and then he'll start speaking Spanish and then it will switch back to English at some point. And it's funny when we go out to eat, like so sometimes we notice people looking at us and we're like, oh, we must be doing it. We must be doing that thing.
I feel like they call that Spanglish when it's like half the sentence is Spanish, half the sentence is English. Because when I lived in Miami, that's what everyone used to say, like, oh, everyone speaks Spanglish. Like you say like both half and half.
Yeah. And we do that a lot now, which is weird. But yeah, we speak both.
Okay. Yeah. That was just like a curious thing. Cause you're like communication. I'm like, do they speak, which language do they speak in? But you know what? Like it's such a valid thing because I actually was watching a video of a girl who, she speaks English. Like she's in America speaking English, but I forget which country she's from. And she speaks Spanish primarily. That's her first language. And she was like, you guys don't know my personality because I can't express my personality in English. She's like, 100%. I'm different when I'm in speaking Spanish because I know how to say what I'm thinking. She's like, in English, I'm trying to just get the right words out. So like, I'm not really getting my full personality out there.
Yeah, that's a very real experience that we both experience. You know, I feel like his family, for example, I don't feel like they actually know the real me. Obviously they know me, but like, I do not feel myself speaking Spanish. I don't have the same cadence. I don't have the same tone. I don't have the same personality. I don't have the same wit and humor. I'm not as quick. Like I'm just not fully me in Spanish. And he feels the same way in English. Like he's such a jokester. He's so funny. He's a Gemini. He's a social butterfly. Like he wants to talk a lot. He has like a really unique sense of humor and he makes a lot of jokes. And sometimes they land and then sometimes they miss the mark because they don't fully hit. And
English is such a hard language though. Like some words have five different meanings to them and you're like, I don't know which context I'm using this word in.
And it's also just like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's even more subtle than the right words. It's like just even the tone of things. Like sometimes I'll say something and he'll think that I'm mad, but like anyone else who heard me in English would understand that it was like complete sarcasm and joke.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff that is, I'm not going to lie, it's exhausting for us sometimes. We're like, no, you don't get it.
You know what? At least you guys have an excuse because sometimes people speak the same language and they still feel that way. Like you don't get it. It's like true. You say to them, like, am I speaking another language? Like how else do you want me to say this to you? Because it makes sense in my head. So trust me, I think every relationship, no matter what language, has the same issue there.
Yeah, fair.
That is so funny. That's so good. All right. Any last words of wisdom, advice, anything in regards to having it all, having the love, having the success, having the business, and just enjoying and loving your life the way that you do and building the success and embodying all your energies and whatnot. What would be your last pieces of advice for the girls?
I think just to bring it full circle to what we talked about at the beginning, you know, I really think the secret to having the most happy, fulfilled, successful life is genuinely listening to yourself and following what you want above all else. It's really disregarding the opinions and the judgments of other people and being able to trust yourself to follow that path, even when it doesn't make sense, even when it seems illogical. That is the thing that's going to create miracles and magic in your life. And so you have to be willing to take those courageous steps of, I don't know why I feel drawn to this. I don't know why I feel inspired by this. I want to do this type of work. I want to quit this job. I want to travel to this country. I want to go explore. I want to go on a date with a stranger in another country. Like those things, you have to be able to trust yourself and follow those pings. That's what's going to create the most magical existence for you. I think where we get trapped is when we try to fit into a box. We try to fit into a label. We try to dress the way that we think other people like. We try to follow the trends. We try to, you know, do what other people are doing. Oh, social media is a thing, so I'm going to do that now. Or this is a good job, so I'm going to take it. Or everyone else is saying this or acting this way or liking these things, so I'm going to like these things. Really having the courage to truly be yourself and to live authentically loud and follow your heart.
I love that. Thank you so much. Where can all of the girls find you online? Of course, I'll have everything linked in the show notes for easy access as well, but where can they connect with you?
So I mainly hang out on Instagram. You guys can find me at _SamanthaDaily. You can check out the podcast, which we also just had an episode with Victoria. So you can come over and chat about or chat with us. We talked all about relationships, dating, so many fun things that we got into. The podcast is called Makeshift Happen. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, basically everywhere. And then if you want to check out programs, if you're a business owner, if you're curious, you can go to SamanthaDaily.com.
Thank you so much, Samantha. This was so much fun.